Good evening. Reproductive rights under fire across the nation, and the House meets on countering Trump's claims to executive privilege, while more countries flee Iraq as war clouds gather. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, May 15th, 2019. The White House on Wednesday rejected another round of document requests from the House, expanding on its assertions that Democrats in Congress lacked a legitimate legislative purpose for the demands and were inappropriately replicating the work of the special counsel. The letter from the White House counsel laid out a series of arguments, saying essentially that Congress was not a law enforcement body and does not have the standing to investigate the president. The letter stopped short of asserting executive privilege over the documents, which relate to 81 individuals and entities connected to the president or his campaign and inauguration. Representative Gerald Nadler of New York, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, called the letter outrageous. At hearings on executive privilege held by the committee, Nadler emphasized that Trump was not above the law.
Until recently, no president had ever stated that his plan across the board would be to fight any and all oversight from Congress. In declaring that he plans to, quote, fight all the subpoenas, unquote, President Trump has announced his hostility to our system of checks and balances, and is thereby seeking to hold himself above the law. The president's statement was not just isolated rhetoric. It was an admission of what this administration has been doing and has recently escalated since the start of the 116th Congress, when it became clear that the House of Representatives would carry out its duty and the will of the voters by engaging in constitutionally necessary oversight of the executive branch. By this administration's command, the White House has attempted to impede over 20 congressional investigations, including by ignoring or failing to provide meaningful responses to dozens of letters requesting information on topics ranging from the Affordable Care Act to the security of our elections to the policy of separating children from their parents at the border. Government witnesses have failed to appear for hearings and interviews. While in other administrations, Congress issued subpoenas only as a last resort when negotiations failed, the Trump administration has often been unwilling to engage with Congress at all unless and until a subpoena is issued and a contempt proceeding is looming. This constitutional brinksmanship is particularly unacceptable where, as here, the president is using the powers of his office to impede an investigation into his own alleged misconduct. The president's protective assertion of executive privilege is unprecedented in its scope. The Justice Department openly admits that it has not even reviewed all the underlying documents, let alone provided any specific reasons for withholding them. Although the Attorney General cited one example from the Clinton era in which the President made a protective assertion of privilege to allow more time to review the requested materials, in that instance, the White House had already been providing documents to Congress on a rolling basis for nearly a year, and the White House completed this review just 15 days later. This administration has produced none of the evidence underlying the Mueller report, and it has made no effort to show that it is now reviewing these documents on a good faith basis to determine which ones, if any, are legitimately subject to privilege. In any event, as the committee has pointed out in multiple letters to the Attorney General, the White House has already waived executive privilege several times over, to the extent that ever could have applied to underlying evidence collected by the special counsel's office. Moreover, no court has ever held that the executive branch can withhold documents from Congress in the face of a subpoena simply because they consist of law enforcement files. Congress routinely receives this type of information. In just the last Congress, the Justice Department produced hundreds of thousands of pages of sensitive law enforcement files in response to congressional subpoenas, including files pertaining to the Russia investigation, which was ongoing at the time. For these and other reasons, I am deeply troubled by the President's 11th-hour decision to make a blanket invocation of executive privilege for all redacted portions of the Mueller report and all of the underlying materials. I had invited White House Counsel Pat Cipollone to testify at today's hearing so that he could better explain and defend the White House's assertion of privilege. But he has declined that invitation, and he has instead submitted a written statement that restates the same arguments previously raised by the Justice Department.
And that was the Gerald Nadler, who is the Representative Gerald Nadler, is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. Meanwhile, Alabama lawmakers passed a bill Tuesday that outlaws most all abortions in the state. The legislation would make it a felony to perform an abortion at any stage of pregnancy, with almost no exceptions. The law is now in the hands of the governor, who will decide whether to sign it into law. If enacted, a legal battle is certain, with courts expected to block the legislation. As part of a long-term legal strategy to overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark 1973 Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion. On Wednesday morning, abortion rights advocates urged Alabama Governor Kay Ivey to reject the bill and vowed swift legal action if it is enacted. Ivey has not announced if she will sign the bill approved Tuesday, but told reporters on Wednesday that potential legal fees resulting from lawsuits certainly cannot deter your efforts to protect the unborn. Kentucky, Mississippi, Ohio, and Georgia recently have approved bans on abortion once a fetal heartbeat is detected. The Alabama bill goes further by seeking to ban abortion outright. Last week, Alabama senators rejected an attempt to add an exception for rape and incest. Supporters had argued that exceptions would weaken their hope of creating a vehicle for a Supreme Court challenge. In Ohio, Planned Parenthood and abortion clinics sued Wednesday to thwart the state's latest and most restrictive abortion law. Wednesday's lawsuit, filed in federal court in Columbus by groups representing the American Civil Liberties Union and other civil rights attorneys, says banning abortions after the first detectable fetal heartbeat is unconstitutional and would prohibit nearly all abortions in Ohio, or as many as 9 of every 10. The Ohio law makes no exceptions for pregnancies resulting from rape or incest and was signed into law by Republican Governor Mike DeWine last month. The state will vigorously defend the law, GOP Attorney General David Yost said Wednesday. Chris France is the executive director of Preterm Ohio, which provides abortion, contraception, and other health services to women. She says the Ohio law is part of a nationwide war against women.
Most states that are passing these laws know that they're unconstitutional. I think their hope is that something's going to make it to the Supreme Court.
And what would happen there?
It's hard to say. I don't know that the Supreme Court wants to hear an abortion case right now. Conjecture among the lawyers is that rather than take a direct hit to a 6-week ban, or even as in Alabama passed this morning, a 2-week ban, that they will take on something that, like a physician-only law, or physicians having to have hospital privileges, or abortion clinics having to have a transfer agreement that would effectively limit abortion even more without a direct hit to Roe v. Wade.
What is the situation particularly in Ohio? Where I know there's many states have had this right sort of chipped away in different ways. Has that been happening outside of this specific law in Ohio?
Oh, absolutely. We have 3 lawsuits pending right now. We have a number of restrictions already, and about a third of our patients or people that are calling are wondering whether abortion is still legal in Ohio.
And is it still legal in Ohio?
It is absolutely still legal in Ohio. And Preterm and a couple other clinics go to the Ohio legal limit, which is up to 22 weeks.
I see.
And the law, even though the governor signed the law, it doesn't take effect until July 10th. And as you know, that the ACLU filed that lawsuit, so hopefully we'll get an injunction.
Is there a war against women going on in the state of Ohio, and why in Ohio and, let's say, not the next state over?
Yeah, I think there's been a war on women going on in this country for quite some time, and trying to limit bodily autonomy. And it's not just Ohio. Ohio is, you know, it's a pretty tough state. And I think if lawmakers really wanted to support women, as they say, that they would make family planning and birth control available. They've just cut Title X, which funds family planning. They provide more access to child care and health care. So we don't see that. And that says to me that, yes, it's definitely a war on women.
That they see women as a voting block that they want to prevent from becoming empowered, as past generations tried to do with the vote and even ownership of land and things like that in the past.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption.
And how about the opposition to this? Is there opposition in the state? And I'm specifically asking about your state because you're there and you have to do it every day. You have to deal with it every day, and that's your expertise. Is there in the state of Ohio any sort of, like, besides what you're doing, is there a grassroots movement to try and defend these rights?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we hear frequently is that younger women aren't involved. And that is absolutely not my perspective, that I think that younger women are realizing what a precarious state of that we live in, and that they are definitely fighting for not only the right to have an abortion, and but LGBT right, encouraging black women to speak up and speak out. So, yeah, I think that there's definitely a grassroots effort.
You mentioned earlier there seems to be a general assault on not just abortion, but even the right to contraception, you were saying. Is that true?
Correct. Yes, that is true. The Trump administration has tried to limit Title 10 in Ohio.
What's Title 10? What exactly is Title 10?
Title 10 is a federal program that provides family planning and birth control and wellness services for women, mostly uninsured women, who don't have access to health care. So it seems like a natural thing that if you wanted to reduce the rate of abortion, that one of the things that you would do is make birth control readily available, and they are not doing that. It's totally counterproductive.
With the Clinton administration back in the 90s, often said we want to make abortion legal but rare. Is maybe that was that argument sort of it turned out playing into these people that, you know, it's a right is a right is a right and not rare or any other right. It's nobody else's business, really.
Abortion is health care. It should be available to whoever needs it and wants it. And what they, you know, they've taken a political issue, and what we see every day is women really struggling to make ends meet. Most of the people we provide abortion care for are already parents. Two-thirds are already mothers. So they know what it takes to be a good parent, and mostly when they're making a decision to have an abortion, it's either to get ahead, get their GED, get a college education, or care for the children that they already have.
Where do you think it might be headed?
Yeah, well, I think that people are waking up, and certainly the attacks on women in healthcare is certainly not the only thing that the Trump administration is doing. But it permeates the whole country. So I think that there are a lot of things that are going to be tough in the next few years, and we really have to pay attention, and we really need to encourage people to get out and vote and get active in their communities.
Chris France is the executive director of Preterm Ohio, which provides abortion, contraception, and other health services to women. The American Civil Liberties Union has signed on to most cases defending abortion rights. Bridget Amiri is a deputy director at the ACLU's Reproductive Freedom Project. She says anti-choice forces have been chipping away at abortion rights for years, and now they see a friend in the White House and, more importantly, the Supreme Court.
Yeah, so the Ohio ban on abortion starting at 6 weeks in pregnancy had been signed into law by the governor a couple of weeks ago, but it hasn't yet taken effect. We filed a lawsuit today to stop that law from ever taking effect. And it's a direct attack at Roe versus Wade. It's an attempt to get a case to the Supreme Court to try to overturn Roe versus Wade. And again, we'll fight that every step of the way.
What is this bill? What is a fetal heartbeat bill, and what does that mean? I mean, that's how it's being talked about in the media. What does that mean? Is that a selling point, or is that a real thing?
What it is a way to window dress what the anti-abortion movement has always wanted to do, and that's ban abortion at the earliest stages of pregnancy. And there is fetal heartbeat activity detected at approximately 6 weeks in pregnancy. So really these bans are bans on abortion starting at 6 weeks in pregnancy. And that's before most people even know that they're pregnant. So really this is about pushing abortion access out of reach for many people.
Would that be a criminal bill? Would that make doctors or practitioners who performed abortions liable to homicide laws and things like that?
Well, it's not homicide law, but there are criminal penalties for violating the ban in Ohio.
And what would those penalties be?
It's a felony law, and I don't have at my fingertips the number of years in jail, but they are stiff felony criminal penalties for violating the ban. And doctors won't risk those penalties. What they'll do is stop providing abortions. So what we have said in our lawsuit is that the court needs to stop the law before it takes effect to prevent irreparable harm to people seeking access to abortion, because doctors will just stop providing abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy.
What about the women? Is there any sanctions against them?
Not in Ohio law.
What is right behind all this? Because this is now one of a number of states. I just did an interview with somebody at Planned Parenthood in Alabama. They said this doesn't even have anything to do with abortion as far as they're concerned. This is about women and women's rights and some sort of way to control women. How do you see this law in Ohio?
Well, I mean, it's certainly, it's about both things. It's about banning abortions, which always has been about controlling the ability of women to make decisions about their bodies. And this is really a ban on abortion at the early stages of pregnancy, and it is a culmination of decades-long attempts by the anti-abortion movement to restrict access to abortion. For years, the other side has been chipping away at the right to abortion. Some places, there's only one abortion provider left. And now they're just taking direct aim at the right to abortion. They're emboldened by the Trump administration, and they're emboldened by the changes on the Supreme Court.
What does this mean about the morning after pill? Would that also be made illegal?
It would not. That is a contraceptive method, and it's, contraception is explicitly excluded in the law.
And what about abortion pills? Isn't there a pill that causes an abortion to happen as well?
Yes. Any method of abortion performed after 6 weeks in pregnancy would be banned in Ohio if we are unable to get the law blocked.
In that circumstance, it would be like a prohibition or a drug law, anti-marijuana or anti-heroin law.
I haven't really thought about it in those terms. I mean, certainly the prescription for medication abortion is a prescription drug. Really, there's no differentiation in the law between medication abortion and surgical abortion. It just says that if there is a detectable heartbeat, then the doctor is prohibited from doing the abortion.
This law is patently unconstitutional as far as the law is today, and it I assume that it would be, like many laws like this that have been that people have brought forward in these conservative states, found unconstitutional right from the beginning, but then they have to go through a process where they wind up at the Supreme Court.
That's right. We expect the district court and the courts of appeals to block these early abortion bans. The Supreme Court has said for over 45 years that states may not ban abortions prior to viability. And so all of these bans are blatantly unconstitutional. The question is then what happens with the Supreme Court? Does the Supreme Court take one of these cases, and does it speak about whether Roe versus Wade should be overturned or undermined in some way? We have no crystal ball. We can't predict what's going to happen. We will just vow to fight every step of the way.
This might go to the Supreme Court, and then there's this feeling that the that President Trump's appointees to the Supreme Court are going to, for the first time, actually rule in favor of what these laws have said.
Well, certainly the proponents of the abortion bans are banking on that. They have explicitly said that, that the changes in the Supreme Court have created this opportunity for them to push a blatantly unconstitutional abortion ban forward and try to get the Supreme Court to reconsider Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm. You expect that this will be found unconstitutional at the state level, but eventually, will it get to the Supreme Court, in your opinion?
It's hard to say. I don't know. I don't know if the Supreme Court will take one of these cases, but I think it's important to know that there are a number of other abortion restrictions that aren't necessarily outright bans on abortion that have severely restricted access to abortion already in many places. And there are a number of those cases in the pipeline, including cases that the Supreme Court may choose to take in the coming months. So any of those cases could be a vehicle for the Supreme Court to diminish the right to abortion. So we have to keep our attention not just on the bans that have everyone's attention today, but on all the abortion restrictions that have culminated in situations where abortion is not widely available in many places. Abortion is legal in all 50 states today, and that's another point I want to reiterate.
President Clinton, especially who was an advocate for women on one level, said that we want to make abortion legal but rare. Do you think that some of these opinions of like somehow that instead of fighting the anti-abortion forces but trying to find some accommodation with them had led to this situation?
I don't know necessarily if I share that. I mean, certainly many of the same people who oppose abortion also oppose access to contraception. and they oppose comprehensive sex education. So if there is an interest in reducing the need for abortion, then you should be a proponent of access to contraception and access to comprehensive sex education. And generally, that's not what we see. We see people on the other side opposed to all of those things, which really tells you that this is about controlling people's bodies and controlling their decisions around pregnancy.
They want to turn the clock back.
They do. Absolutely. They absolutely want to turn the clock back. And we will do everything that we can to make sure that doesn't happen.
Bridget Amiri is deputy director of the ACLU's Reproductive Freedom Project. And in more reproductive health care news, as Utah defends its strict new abortion ban against a court challenge, the chief prosecutor overseeing the county with the state's only two clinics has said he won't enforce the measure. Democratic Salt Lake County District Attorney Sim Gill's decision marks the latest example of an official resisting such laws passed by states around the country. Gill said Tuesday that the Utah ban on abortions after 18 weeks appears unconstitutional, so filing felony charges against doctors who perform them as the court challenge plays out could violate their rights. Gill's position mirrors a stance by the Attorney General of Michigan. Like Utah, Arkansas also passed a ban on abortions after 18 weeks. Gill secured a federal order on Monday, confirming his office won't have to enforce the measure as the court challenge plays out. However, if the law is eventually upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, Gill said he likely would have to enforce it. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Take a moment to become a WBAI buddy and support this important work. In more national news, North Carolina Senator Dan Bishop, the lead sponsor of the state's controversial bathroom bill, won a decisive victory in Tuesday's special primary after last year's congressional race was marred by election fraud. He now faces Democrat Dan McCready, a Marine Corps veteran, in September's do-over election in the state's 9th congressional district. In November's general election, McCready appeared to have lost to Republican Mark Harris before state officials determined the vote had been tainted by fraud. A Republican operative working for Harris had run a scheme where volunteers collected and filled in absentee ballots to benefit Harris. In February, the state ordered a new vote. Bishop, who has aligned himself with President Trump, was the chief sponsor of the bathroom bill in 2016 that required transgender people to use the restrooms corresponding to their gender at birth. However, the measure was repealed in the face of boycotts against North Carolina. No matter the outcome, Democrats will remain in control of the North Carolina State House. And a measure to legalize recreational marijuana in New Jersey fizzled out Wednesday when the state Senate president said he would instead look to voters next year and will pursue separate bills to expand medical cannabis and wipe clean some criminal records. Democrat Steve Sweeney vowed that adult-use marijuana, supported by fellow Democrats Governor Phil Murphy and Assembly Speaker Craig Coughlin, would become legal, just not now. Murphy campaigned on recreational cannabis legalization and pushed hard for the bill. He said he would consider a referendum but didn't want to abandon legislation. Speaking Wednesday, Murphy said he had a mixed reaction to the announcement, but that he was in favor of pushing ahead with medical pot expansion and criminal records expungement. Among the stumbling blocks to the bill, the measure would allow a fast track to expunge marijuana-related convictions for many people, while others worried that black communities in New Jersey would miss out on economic opportunities in a legal weed market. And in fast-breaking news, Washington has suspended all U.S.-based cargo and passenger air service between the U.S. and Venezuela, citing safety and security conditions in the Latin American country amid attempts to oust the government in Caracas. The move was announced by the U.S. Department of Transportation on Wednesday. The decision was made with the approval of the Secretary of State and in cooperation with the Homeland Security Department. The decision is yet another largely symbolic jab at the Venezuelan authorities, since the air service between the two countries was largely non-existent already. American Airlines was the last major U.S. carrier to suspend flights to and from Venezuela back in March. Others have halted their flights over the past 2 years. And finally, the Netherlands has followed Germany in suspending its mission in Iraq amid heightened tensions between the U.S. and Iraq's neighbor, Iran. The Netherlands decided to halt the mission, which provided assistance to the Iraqi authorities because of a security threat. That's according to the Dutch ANP news service. The Dutch Defense Ministry confirmed the suspension of the mission to the media. The ministry spokesperson told ANP that withdrawal of Dutch forces from the area is currently not discussed. The German Defense Ministry has earlier announced that it halted its mission aimed at training the Iraqi soldiers, citing increased tensions on the ground. The developments came after Washington ordered all the non-essential personnel of the American embassy in Baghdad and a consulate in Erbil to leave Iraq as soon as possible. A leader of the left party's faction in the German parliament, Sahara Wagenknecht, warned the U.S. is poised for war with Iran. She called on those who want to save the international peace and the Iranian nuclear deal to make it clear that they are against these war plans, arbitrary U.S. sanctions, and the use of U.S. military bases in Europe as a potential war with Iran.